Hello! Welcome to Kasinatian, Kasayuran, Kasaysayan, Kamatuuran. Experience, knowledge, history, truth. A show dedicated to discussing the latest topics of interest on Philippine politics and society from the perspective of Filipinos in general and Cebuanos in particular. This is your host, Ryan Dave Raila, educator and voice in the wind. Yesterday, the President, Rodrigo Duterte, has conducted his annual State of the Nation address. Now, regarding SONA, and this has great implications for us, no, as a form of informing powers of the President. And just the other day, I was able to make and publish a podcast detailing my expectations of the State of the Nation address for the President. Today, I am going to break down my take on the State of the Nation address based on what I have noted down in the speech of the President. So we are going to divide, or I am going to divide my discussion for today into three components. First off, we have the pros, or the things that I find as interesting and quite approve of in terms of the President's SONA. So there's the pros section. The second are the cons, or the things that I find as either dubious or somehow I do not agree to these proposals or to these statements by the President made yesterday during his SONA speech. And then finally, there's this section here of what I expected to come out of the SONA. Now, this is not redundant from my previous podcast, but rather what I expected is somehow the deduction or the reaction that I have had from the SONA and from the key points that we are going to tackle about the State of the Nation address. So with these three components, we shall be going over them, coming from the pros, and then the cons, and then later on, the expectations or the reactions. So in this format, I hope you will stay with me for the duration of this podcast, as this will be quite long, as there are a lot of notes here that I have to cohesively address to you. Okay, so let us begin. Okay. The pros. So first off, I have here the transition to online systems. Okay, so this is an enhancement, or this is a nod to the enhancement of e-governance, as the President yesterday mentioned that government should cater more to services that is geared towards online platforms rather than paper, no? So this has been a constant move by this administration for years now, and even prior to that, the prior administration has been moving towards this goal of transitioning to online systems, which translates into better e-governance. The thing about e-governance is that since the advent of the internet, this has become more and more of a viable option, and as the years go on, or as the years went by, it's no longer just an option, but it has become now more of a utility or a necessity for governments around the world. And so the Philippines, although it is lagging behind in many aspects of e-governance, is now playing catch up, and I believe that's a very good development for the country, you know. With online systems available, there are some benefits to this. For example, increased accountability, and of course increased performance or level of services that the government can offer to its greatest stakeholders, citizens. Okay, second. Okay, another point here in the pros section is the no vaccine, no face-to-face classes The president has announced this. I believe this was addressed primarily to DepEd and CHED, that without the vaccine for coronavirus, he would not allow face-to-face classes in classroom settings. Why? Because students will be at risk, and not only students, but the faculty members as well. So this is a good move, and I would, and to his credit, no, the president has done this in order to safeguard the children and of course the faculty and the staff and also the parents from dangers of the pandemic, no, the Wuhan virus. Third point, online privacy and protection for consumers. Now, with the increasing viability of online sellers, and they have been around for quite some time, but most especially in 2020 with businesses or physical locations, brick and mortar stores shuttered because of the pandemic, no? Online businesses are booming, and of course there's a growing need for online privacy, especially for the everyday consumer. This becomes an issue not simply because of scammers, but also because of the sophistication that many of those who engage in illicit activities in online businesses, for example, let's say, well, there are the scammers, no, and then many others, and also ordinary citizens who just wish to conduct their businesses peacefully and securely, no. So this is a good development for that, no, and I think this should be tackled seriously by Congress in the coming days. Next, free online training for TESDA for OFW. Sorry, free online training from TESDA for OFWs. So this is what we would call as retooling, especially for the returning OFWs who have been repatriated back to the country because of COVID-19, no? So they would need to find jobs to support their families and to have income as well. And so this would be a good platform for that one, no? To retool them, to bring them back to the local economy, and to try to somehow equip them for either they start small businesses or they find new employments across what is available for now, no, under the pandemic. Okay. So next point, Corporate Recovery Act fast tracking. So the fast tracking of the so-called Corporate Recovery Act is a good investment, especially in this time of the pandemic, simply because we need to get our businesses back on their feet as soon as possible, because the economy has been suffering a lot from the problems of the pandemic. Now, there are some aspects of reopening the economy that I am quite skeptical of, simply because there are businesses that would need physical contact, and the risk of infection, especially when the cases are still rising in this country, could be very real and could devastate communities, no? So we have to be very careful about opening up the economy. We have to do this gradually. But a first or an important first step for this one would be the Corporate Recovery Act or the Corporate Recovery Bill. Sorry, the term is bill, not act. It's not yet law, no? Congress still needs to deliberate on that. Okay. Next point, Executive Order 104, so-called price ceiling of retail prices. This is crucial at a time like this, especially when goods and commodities are in short supply, no, most especially in the urban areas. Okay, so because of goods and commodities somehow, well, there are unscrupulous individuals and unscrupulous, let's say, businesses that would take advantage of it, that would profiteer from the fears of people, no? Especially when there are in places with serious lockdown measures like Cebu. So this is a good measure to try to curb that kind of profiteering from unscrupulous individuals, the price ceiling of retail prices. Okay, next, praise for the frontliners. Okay, so the frontliners have been doing a lot and they have been sacrificing a lot for this nation, and to their credit, somehow we have avoided more serious implications or more serious impacts from this pandemic. So praising the frontliners is a pros on my list here, simply because that would give them a morale boost. Okay, next, barangay development program. This is also in conjunction with the so-called Balik Provincia program, which I have listed here because of its many lapses under the con section. But for the barangay development program, I believe this is a good step into promoting countryside development, okay, as well, because this would mean that people would not necessarily have to crowd in urban centers anymore when the countryside is far more developed, no? Or rather, when the countryside is developed gradually over the years. So this is a good step. This is what I would call a good what I would call as a good seed for countryside for the countryside, no? For the provinces, because so far, especially when looking back at Philippine history, development in the country has been focused on major urban centers like Metro Manila, for example, Davao and Cebu. So that development needs to somehow spread beyond the confines of the urban centers or the major urban centers. Okay, next would be the proposed Department of OFWs. Now, the proposed Department of OFWs is, I think this is a mixed bag for me, but I listed it on the pros section. Well, why, you may ask? The proposed Department of OFWs is somehow duplicating some of the functions of our Department of Foreign Affairs and, of course, the many consulates that we have already abroad, no? So I believe that while this is a good development to cater to OFWs almost exclusively, since they are a huge part in the Philippines' GDP, we need to ask, what are the specific functions of this department outside of the Department of Foreign Affairs, no? So this is critical in that aspect. Okay, so the proposed Department of OFWs, a pros on my list. Next would be the Nursing Education Act. The Nursing Education Act is, I think this is quite expected to be forthcoming, considering that the Philippines is the largest exporter of nurses across the world for many decades now, no? Now, the Nursing Education Act, as a prerogative of government today, this is not the Nursing Education Act, but the Nursing Education Bill, no? So sometimes we get confused as to what is an act, what is a bill. Just to clarify, an act is already a law, a bill is not. It's still a proposal in Congress. So this is still a proposal as pushed by the President. So the Nursing Education Bill, so I got my notes wrong on that one, no? Pardon. So the Nursing Education Act. But again, what are the details for this act? And how would this alter the nursing education scene in the Philippines or the nursing education industry in the Philippines? No? Next would be the National Disease and Prevention Management Authority. This is another proposal by the President. So in the light of the COVID pandemic, the National Disease and Prevention Management Authority is a crucial is a crucial proposal, as this would help us prepare for further pandemics in the future or further outbreaks of disease in the future, no? Whether it be on the scale of COVID-19 or less. Okay, next. We have the proposed Department of Disaster Resilience. Okay, so we go back to the question of duplication. We already have the ILG, we already have the DENR, and many other government bodies that would cater to disaster resilience. But since there are no specifics as to what this department is, no, there is no specifics yet as to what this department is, I believe it would be interesting to know how this would alter the coordination between the already existing government bodies on disaster resilience. Okay, and then last on the pros list, the proposed Internet Transaction Act. Now, in line with online privacy and protection for consumers, this is good. Again, sorry, this is not Act, this is again Internet Transaction Bill, no? So the proposed Internet Transaction Bill, since this is not a law yet, but I believe this has been touted by the president as a form of protection and as well as a form of revenue generation for the government in the future, especially with the increased volume of internet transactions now due to the realities of the pandemic. Okay, now, cons. Okay, we have here on the list, perhaps this is one of the most controversial, this is one of the more controversial aspects of the SONA for this year, the Drilon focus on oligarchy. The president on the get-go has made mention of Senator Franklin Drilon, especially on his allegations against the president's family. So the idea of an oligarchy has been touted by the president, especially in the recent weeks because of the ABS-CBN shutdown, and this has been echoed, or this talking point of breaking the oligarchy has been echoed by the supporters of the administration, whether it be on the social media or by certain pronouncements from key allies like Senator Alan Peter Cayetano, no? Now, this focus on oligarchy is critical for our discussion or on any issues regarding to related to the president's actions. Okay, so it is no secret that the president and his allies have recently shattered ABS-CBN because of non-renewal of their franchise, and as well as there are questions as to what kind of oligarchy the president has broke or has somehow as he claims, no, what kind of or what part of the Philippine oligarchy has he demolished lately, but perhaps that's not really true that the oligarchy is broken, no? So there's my take on that. Okay, admonition. Okay, so what did the president somehow condemn or admonish in his speech? Well, there would be the partisan politics of his day. Okay, so at this time, partisan politics has been admonished by the president as so the president made mention of partisan politics has as a hindrance for his administration to effectively counter much of what's happening in line with the pandemic. So that's one of the cons. That is this the proper venue to really admonish people or to really condemn partisan politics, especially considering that the country is now under a quasi-military rule because of all the policemen out and about, and the military is out in force as well. It doesn't help that there's already the passage of an anti-terrorism law, which many have petitioned against as somehow a measure not to quash terrorism, but to quash dissent and critics in the Philippines, no, critics to Duterte and his allies. So yeah, should the SONA be a platform for the admonition or the condemnation of partisan politics? Okay. Then, the president also threatened communication services. Okay. So, on this aspect, I believe this is one of the major cons in my list here. The threatening of telecommunication services does not really address the core issue of the poor services of telecommunications here in the Philippines. Because while threatening them may somehow spur them to action, but instead of threatening them, I would like to say that the Philippine government should be procreative in terms of, let's say, setting the groundwork for better internet and telephone and telecommunication services in general to for the country. So what do we do by setting the groundwork? Well, we somehow, for example, allow new players to come in and to challenge the duopoly of major corporations like Globe, for example, and Smart. So there's that aspect, no? So threatening telecommunication services, it's a major no-no for me, because I don't think we're really going to get results out of this thuggish approach to improving our telecommunication services, no? So another cons on my list would be the plea for a vaccine from China. You know, why do we have to go to China? Are there no other sources? Okay, so that's one of the key things. Are there no other sources for the vaccines? Because I'm pretty sure China will use this as leverage against us, especially that we already have a lot of serious issues and rows with China, no? So what concessions will China be asking the Philippines if they are going to give us this crucial vaccine, which of course we have no idea as to how the Chinese developed this. And in fact, I would argue this controversial point here, and that point is China should give the vaccine for free as indemnity for the Wuhan virus that it has unleashed upon the world, whether it was done consciously or somehow by accident, no? So yeah, China should take responsibility for the coronavirus. Okay, another cons on my list, the integration of TV frequencies from ABS to PTV4. Now, as mentioned by an anchor from CNN yesterday, the integration of TV frequencies from ABS to PTV4 may lead to somehow altering the media landscape. Why? This action would set a precedence to actually incorporate many aspects of what we know today as a free media into government media or state-sanctioned media. No. Now, would this mean that I support, for example, that ABS-CBN be reinstated? Not necessarily. But what I mean is that with the TV frequencies of the defunct channel or the defunct ABS-CBN given to PTV4, it would set a signal that government media is now at the helm of the media scene in the Philippines, and that might mean that government will put forth propaganda in this media. Now, the integration of TV frequencies has been mentioned by the president as a form of as a means to conduct distance learning for children, especially for school children, but But this does not mean that these TV frequencies will not be used for other means, especially for partisan politics purposes, which, as you have known earlier, I mentioned that the president has admonished or has condemned partisan politics, but coming from critics, not coming from his camp, no? So a bit of a hypocrisy there. Okay, next would be tourism and domestic travel. Now, the president mentioned that he is encouraging domestic travel for perhaps in the near future. But I put this on the cons list because tourism, while it is a major industry in the Philippines, should take a backseat as to the economic recovery, because without any clear end game as to how we would gradually open the economy and fight back the vaccine, then tourism as an agenda should be secondary or even tertiary on any government priorities today. Because again, while tourism may be important as an industry for many communities across the Philippines, it is simply not viable today because of the pandemic. So we will have to think long term and put tourism way in the long term rather than put it as a major agenda today. Okay. Another cons. This is a major one. No abuses in Mindanao martial law. So this claim by the president is quite contentious, quite dubious, in the sense that there have been reports, especially coming from marginalized communities of indigenous people like the Lumads and many others in Mindanao, that there have been cases of abuse against them conducted by the military. And because of that, the Lumad have also been historically red tagged by the Duterte administration. We can put this claim to question. Does the government really have data to back up this claim that there have been no abuses from the civilian or the military authorities while Mindanao was in martial law due to what happened to Marawi, no, some years ago? And because of this tragic event that of the Marawi siege, well, we also need to ask today, what were the experiences of Mindanao under martial law for that time? And there has been no comprehensive study as to that as of yet, no? And of course, we know that Marawi is still in ruins after all these years. So we really need to check on this claim by the president that there has been no abuses in Mindanao during its martial law period because of the Marawi siege. Okay, next. Executive Order 114, no, the Balik Provincia Program. This has been controversial, and lately, Richard Gomez, now a politician, former actor Richard Gomez, now a politician in Leyte, has expressed strong criticisms against not only the Balik Provincia Program, but how stranded individuals in the capital have been treated, and how he did mention that there has been lapses in many of the aspects of the program, no? Especially that it affects, for example, the provinces, no, where these stranded individuals would be going home to. So he was calling for somehow a sacking of those in charge of this program and its other related programs as well. And we need to question the Balik Provincia Program as to how careful the implementation of this program is, considering that there are people who might come back to the provinces positive, and they might bring the Wuhan disease with them as well. So that's a huge problem. Okay. Next would be death penalty via lethal injection. Okay, so this has been an old issue. The president has rehashed this again. He has rehashed this I don't know for whatever reason, no? So maybe because he subscribes to the myth that death penalty actually lowers criminality. I have yet to encounter a peer-reviewed journal and from a respectable academic institution or a respectable association that clearly points out that there is a causation or a cause relation effect between death penalty and lowering of crime, especially drug related crime. So in that regard, death penalty via lethal injection, its revival is a major cons on my list, because this has been an old issue rehashed again, no? old wine in new wineskins, so bad thing. Next, no details as to recovery plan. Okay, the biggest point that I want to make today, no details as to recovery plan. Why no details on that one? Okay, there have been let's say, for example, mention of extending loans for small and medium enterprises and many other aspects, no? Also, there has been the so-called corporate recovery bill that has been pushed by the president. However, as to what I would call as recovery, there has been no comprehensive mention or detailed plan released as to what kind of a recovery are we talking about here. Is it simply that businesses are going to get loans, etc.? What would be the new normal for the Philippines in the near future? No, so we can never go back to the pre-COVID arrangements, especially in our daily lives. So it would be nice to see that the president actually has a plan on this one, but there was no mention of it in the SONA. And because of that, it brings me to my next point here. No comprehensive plan for COVID announced. There's no end game as to what is our general strategy as to how to combat COVID. Are we going to be in lockdown indefinitely, especially here in Cebu City? What would be the status of areas that are greatly affected, especially in the capital, no? So what is the plan for what is the plan of government for this? And I would like to know personally, because it has been very disruptive of my life, no? This pandemic, this Wuhan virus. Okay, another major point for the cons: inutil in West Philippine Sea dispute. The president admitted yesterday that he is inutil or useless in the West Philippine Sea dispute. He also claimed that China already has possession of much of the futures of the West Philippine Sea. Now, this really made me mad yesterday, because we still have diplomatic options and we have the initiative on the diplomatic front, considering that the Philippines has won a major arbitration case against China when it filed its case some years ago in The Hague, no? And we have won in that one, and that landmark case has been used by other countries to challenge China's nine dash line claims. And one of the countries that has made good use of that ruling is Vietnam. In fact, Vietnam was taunting Duterte that they are doing what Duterte should be doing, no? And this is a major blow to our international prestige. The president has mentioned that he is inutile when he has a major diplomatic option in his hands. What is tying his hands, no? In terms of dealing with China, can we not deal with China diplomatically? I see that China is strong arming the Philippines, but we can still use diplomacy, which is a traditional tool by small nations in challenging giants, no? Okay, next point, no mention, I've made this point already, but I'll just repeat it for the sake of the record. No mention of diplomacy as a means to counter Chinese aggression in our waters. So, really, we should use that court ruling by The Hague as to, or that arbitration ruling by The Hague as to as to our dealings with China over the West Philippine Sea. Okay? And then last on my cons list, there has been no mention of teacher or student support for the duration of COVID. Is there, for example, since the educators are going to be very, very busy adjusting to the new realities of distance learning, etc., and also the students as well, what would the government be doing to support its faculty and studentry in terms of the conduct of these new format of classes of online or distance classes? Now, there has been mention of, let's say, for example, printed modules and blended learning techniques, but as to how the government will support students and teachers, I believe that should be tackled, or that should have been tackled by the president in quite some detail to reassure that education is not going to freeze over time in the Philippines because of lack of support for our faculty. And I'm pretty sure that there is a plan for this one in CHED and DepEd, especially in the public sector of education. But we really need details to reassure us of what's happening. Isn't that the purpose of the SONA anyway? To reassure people that there is something being done. Okay. So, what did I expect? This is the last segment. What did I expect? I expected, for example, on my first point here for this section, I expected that all oligarchs must be included in our discussion, in the discussion of the president, and not just focus on Senate President Drilon and his incendiary statements against the family of the president. So, in addressing, for example, in the claim of breaking the oligarchy, especially the Lopezes, I think the president would have done better to mention that all oligarchs should be put to question and held accountable for their actions. So who are the oligarchs I'm talking about here? Not just the economic and the political oligarchs. Of course, these are the known political dynasties and the elite businessmen in Philippine politics and commerce. But also, we need to ask, how about the oligarchs who are in major, let's say, religious congregations and religious groups in the Philippines? For example, we have INC, no? The question of the Manalos and many of their allegations, or many of the allegations levied against them, and of course the elders of this group. There are also those who engage in many other dubious activities, like Kibuloy, charismatic leaders like Kibuloy, who are in a way a form of oligarchy in the Philippine religious group settings, no? So there's that. There's also the can we even question the CBCP? Yes, we can even label them as oligarchs if that's the case, no? We need to really put forth, or really need to shine lights of accountability to certain sectors of society that have become centers or locus of power unaccountable to people. And I believe that should be our definition of oligarchy: centers or locus of power unaccountable to people. Okay, so that should be the key. How should we that's my proposal, at least, as to where do we look for oligarchs and how do we bring them to account, no? Especially those who field let's say political candidates who run for political offices in many parts of government. Now, there are religious groups that allow their members to run for political office. The JIL is one of these, no? So many other groups as well. So all oligarchies must be included, not just the enemies of the president. Next, no reprimand or strong statement against online trolls, or even the what we call the infodemic in social media. It would have been nice to see or to hear from the president that he is not encouraging this destructive behavior of, let's say, of BDS, Dilawan, or many other groups in the in social media, and that government is doing something about this, no? But somehow no mention of that, and that may be because, well, many sources have already alleged that Duterte has troll armies in his paid service, no, in social media and many other platforms, just to change the narrative of, or to change the everyday narrative of Filipino politics and society in general towards a more positive view of him and his administration. So that's what have been one of the many allegations, no, lately. Then there are no mentions of new players to break the monopoly in telecommunication services and in many other services and industries in the Philippines. So is the Philippine economy going to open up to new investment, considering that many businesses as well are going out of China over the issue of COVID and many other issues that multinational corporations are facing in China? Should we take advantage or shouldn't we take advantage? Okay. Next, I've made this point before, but I'm going to repeat it for the sake of this segment. No sources or no other sources mentioned as to where to get the COVID-19 vaccine. So since this vaccine is in development and there are about 130 projects across the world, no, from different countries, on pursuing a vaccine for COVID-19, how about try those other sources, Mr. President? We have other sources as well, and those other sources are very important, no? Because that would mean we might get better bargains than from China, which of course we have major disputes with. Then I also expected quite a detailed discussion on business support for small and medium enterprises as to availability in each region. So I believe the SONA is a general speech for the country as a whole, but this agenda should have been at the one of the central points of the State of the Nation address, no? Business support for SMEs, which they have been suffering a lot from. Now there are mention of loan extensions, as well as the granting of loans and many other considerations mentioned by the president, but still no detailed or comprehensive SME support plan for those affected by the COVID-19. No, so that could have been great if there was mention of it in the SONA. Also, I expected a report or a status of the projects of the Build 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 program, not just a general praise for Build Build Build, no? So why do we need this? Why do we need to have a status report on many of the Build 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 projects? Because this has been touted by the president as a springboard for development, no? So nonetheless, a springboard for development, and this because of its labor intensive and capital intensive nature. But then we ask, how accountable or how transparent are these projects, and how much of these projects have already been accomplished, and as to how complete they are by now, no? So perhaps some percentage point, let's say 70% complete, 50% complete, etc. Because Build 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 has been around for 4 years, so it must have bore fruit, right? Next point. Okay, what do they mean by not dodge our obligations to fight for human rights? So this is in light of the anti-terror law, the arrest of critics, and spat of killings in the Philippines for quite some time. So what do people, what did Duterte mean by not dodge our obligation to fight for human rights, when in fact, many issues of human rights have been propping up in the country for the past for the past 4 years, and most especially now, there is a fear of major human rights violations because of the anti-terror law. And what's worse is that the current administration has long been an enemy of the CHR. The Commission on Human Rights has been threatened time and time again by the president and by many of his allies, no? And it doesn't help that there has been a false narrative circulating as to the CHR's role, no? Muddying its mandate or somehow distorting its mandate as allegedly a criminal protection agency, no? An agency that protects the behaviors of criminals. But that's not the case. The CHR was created to protect citizens against government abuses, especially the abuses coming from our armed forces, no? And well, not just armed forces, but the police as well, and many other instrumentalities. So what are they talking about not dodging our obligations to fight for human rights? And also another nail to the coffin of this claim by the president of not dodge our obligation to fight for human rights. If that is so, then why not allow the United Nations to conduct its investigation as to these human rights allegations, especially in the wake of the Tokhang operations, so the anti-drug operations, which has been labeled as anti-poor, brutal, and most especially as ineffective. So, next point, and this is the second to the last, there has been no mention of the creation of a national strategic stockpile. I believe this is crucial as to our future readiness for other disasters, not just for outbreaks in terms of viruses, no? The creation of a national strategic stockpile has been on the agenda of many nations at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, no? Because they were in short supply of medical supplies like ventilators, PPEs, medical drugs, etc. So the creation of a national strategic stockpile and its non-mention in the SONA is a huge disappointment for me, no? Since the national strategic stockpile has not been mentioned, it's a huge disappointment for me, in the sense that that this could have addressed a lot of the shortages of the shortage issues that we are having right now, especially in terms of medical supplies, no? Okay, next, barangay development program needs details aside from AFP development, because so far as I've listened to the SONA yesterday, there was no mention of a barangay development program in detail. The barangay development program has been tackled as a proposal, but there was no details as to what this is or what it would mean for barangays aside from the security aspect provided by the AFP, okay? And how would it relate, or how would it somehow dovetail with the Balik Provincia program much proposed by Senator Bongo? And then last, what is our end game? How do we expect to fight, or how do we expect to win against the coronavirus? So the Philippines has been hailed by many news agencies as one of the countries that has used a militarized approach in order to solve the COVID-19 and to impose strict lockdown measures. But in equal measure as well, the Philippines has been criticized lately under Duterte, no? As taking advantage of the COVID-19 pandemic to silent dissent via the creation of a highly militarized response to what's going on around the world and to the threat of the Wuhan virus, no, the COVID-19. So in this regard, I would really have been assured yesterday of the SONA had the president made clear what are his plans as to the strategy for winning against COVID-19. So what is our winning strategy, or how do we do this gradually in this long and protracted struggle against COVID? Okay. So I believe I've made all my points clear today, and I hope you would forgive me for some of the stutterings that is characteristic of how I speak, no? And I would like you to catch me on the next podcast as well. So thank you for listening for today. And this is your host, Ryan Dave Ryla. I'll catch you on the next one. Goodbye.